and welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes and uncover the untold stories of food and drink businesses. I'm Harry, founder of The Savourist.
I'm Mariana, founder of Hullabaloo. We want to uncover some of the stories from founders and business leaders that wouldn't normally be told. Everyone talks about the positives, the new launches, the NPD.
We want to hear about the not-so-great things, the nitty-gritty and the emotional toll this can have on mental health. Over the next few months, we're going to be talking to founders and business owners about their untold stories.
Everyone goes through these challenging moments. It's a fact of life. It's time to talk about them and encourage others to do the same.
Hello and welcome to Untold. Our guest today is Hugh Duffy. Hugh Duffy was a co-founder of Sandow's, who pioneered cold brew coffee in the UK from 2014 until 2020, when the decision was made not to continue. Welcome to Untold, Hugh.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
To kick off, could you please introduce yourself and your career?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I am originally from Australia. I moved over to the UK just over 10 years ago, probably just a few weeks ago. I'm originally from a fairly small town in Queensland in Australia called Toowoomba. Moved over here when I was 18, and it took me a little while to get a job, but I ended up working in hospitality. I worked at Giraffe, which I don't know if people recognize that. It's sort of like Wagamama or Pizza Express or something like that. And
as a parent, I do recognize.
Yeah. I mean, it blew up a lot of balloons for kids, and you know, the coloring in mats. That was all sort of like very much the day to day. But yeah, I guess I was there, and long and the short of that is, like, you know, definitely picked up a few things about hospitality and looking after people, and got an interest in food and drink. And it was pretty long hours, so I used to sort of take a break at lunchtime or whatever, and go to a coffee shop that was nearby that was, you know, quite opposite. It was like really calm and very just a complete change of scene, and I think maybe the logic was quite basic. It was very much just like, you know, I love the look of what they do, maybe I'll do what they do. And so I kind of worked hard to get into coffee, and eventually managed to get a job at a place called Tap Coffee in Soho. And I was working there as a barista, and ended up getting the opportunity to learn how to roast coffee and manage one of the cafes and that sort of thing. So a lot of variety, and that's where I met my eventual co-founder, Luke. It was a really entrepreneurial kind of place. You know, lots of people that we worked with there went on to start their own businesses of all sorts of different varieties, from other cafes to just a real mix, like consulting and a few other bits and pieces. And I guess that sort of spirit, you know, made us think like we can have a go. And so with that in mind, like we in about 2013 started working on cold brew, which was, you know, something that we actually sold on our summer menu in that cafe. And it was pretty popular, albeit only on like a sort of one cafe scale, or, you know, a couple of cafes. And, you know, we liked it, and we thought, let's have a go at starting our own business. And that eventually turned into Sandow's, which, you know, I did that for, I'm just, you know, on the other side of 6 years running that. And we took it from, you know, the idea through to, you know, creating a product, and we made that initially in our kitchen, and then, you know, took that through all the various different stages of manufacturing through to, you know, having it all outsourced and co-manufactured, and lots of different versions, from glass bottles to cans and bag in boxes, and in various different countries and that sort of thing. And I guess with that, I was really responsible for like the brand and sales in many ways. And you know, I had some level of success in that sense, in that we managed to get the product into certainly all the luxury retailers like Selfridges, Harrods, Fortnum & Mason, Whole Foods, Soho House, that kind of thing. So you know, that was cool. And also on the other end, managed to get into like Marks and Spencer's and the Sainsbury's, so have a little bit of experience on, you know, both sides of sort of the high end, and then also, you know, high volume. And yeah, we raised money. Initially it was very bootstrap, just, you know, making it kind of as we could afford, and taking orders on a Friday for to be delivered on Tuesday, and no wastage and that kind of thing. Eventually raised money on Crowdcube in about 2015, and then beyond that raised money with various angel investors to the tune of about 800,000. And yeah, I guess like all those things considered, it's, you know, yeah. It was an amazing journey, and we decided to not to continue with it in I guess it's quite a long drawn out process, that sort of decision, but that, you know, ultimately came to an end with like announcements and that sort of thing in April of 2020. And I guess since then I've been doing a little bit of consulting and coaching founders in a similar space, a lot of it beverage. I guess that's like the reputation is like, you know, beverage, that sort of maybe a natural fit.
Yeah.
And a bit of e-commerce, you know, where I've got some experience too.
Amazing, man. I'm super excited to dive into this episode. I think it's going to be a fascinating learning curve for a lot of our listeners. And also an incredibly modest bloke. I remember walking around London Coffee Festival and seeing Sandown's and the buzz that you guys gave. I was working at Cause at the time and was just incredibly inspired by everything you guys have done and the team behind it. And I'm sure there's loads and loads of sort of stories that we can go into, but I think one that stuck out for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I listened to it on a podcast where you guys were selling coffee over summer in a field one time and went out and got a load of sort of to try and increase the sales, went out and bought a load of water and beer and started selling that in the park. Is that correct?
That one's sort of, I guess now it's, you know, we don't have to worry about any incriminations, but that was early days. We did a festival it was in Victoria Park, and the cold brew just wasn't selling. The scene was a bit more kind of people on the hard stuff, on the sort of more illicit end of the spectrum, and cold brew just wasn't registering. And yeah, what they really needed was bottles of water. And so yeah, we had to learn quickly about like pivoting to, you know, what it was that people wanted in that moment. And we did that with some success. It was quite amazing just to, like, you know, sort of switch up the plan and do that. That is definitely maybe a story for a different time, but it's you know, I think it was, yeah, I think in the early days we were just piecing it together really, you know, on the fly, and that was super enjoyable. And then I guess, yeah, probably as everything kind of progressed, and, you know, it's funny how like one, even small bits of success or even perceived success, you know, start to compound, and then it raises the stakes of like being able to take small risks like that, because that was really early days and we thought, well, you know, we've got kind of nothing to lose, let's do what we have to do today. And I think that's it. I don't know, going a bit too kind of going off topic there a bit.
I love it. I think it's a great hustle. Well, as you know, Untold, we want to talk about some of the times where things didn't go to plan and essentially went wrong. And our aim here is to get as many founders and business leaders talking about their experiences so that we can raise the bar and get everyone else to do the same, to address kind of the harder moments in a founder's life cycle, to head on and encourage others to know that it's okay to talk about it. So I guess sort of on leading on that, it would be great to hear a time from your side where things didn't go quite well and sort of the stories around that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like a bit of a maybe self-proclaimed expert in failure. I've kind of, you know, some of it I've learned from and managed to turn into good things, and some of it, you know, it's not so much. I think, you know, when I first heard about the podcast, I thought it was definitely something that's needed, and you know, being able to speak about like some of the more difficult parts of you know, the lifestyle that comes along with being part of this industry is yeah, it's so needed. And you know, there's so much like celebration of success, but with every sort of success story, there are probably, you know, for every one of those, probably 99 that don't go right. And it's actually, you know, it's not just the ones that maybe everybody writes off, you know, in the really right at the beginning. Sometimes, you know, it can be that something just sort of fizzles out, or, you know, there's a whole load of different places along the spectrum between those two as well. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's not something that I love talking about, and it's not something that I have really talked about very much, certainly not publicly. But, you know, one of the big questions that I get is, you know, what happened with Sandows, and what's the story there? And ultimately, yeah, like, I guess it's my big sort of failure in inverted commas. You know, shutting it down is a really, really difficult time, really difficult decision, difficult process. And yeah, it's like a real mixture of like kind of quagmire of like, you know, positive emotions and negative ones, and it's not entirely clean and, you know, cut and dry either. So I think a lot of the difficulty came from like the big sort of gap between the perceived success. You know, we maybe that was even more pronounced for us because we had a sort of a product and a brand that had almost universally recognized good branding, again, you know, very much in air quotes. And yeah. You know, that meant that maybe, yeah, I think everybody thought like everything was always all good, and that we would, you know, were smashing it, crushing it, that kind of stuff. And ultimately, you know, we just didn't. And I've had a lot of time to like really think about what the one-liner is.
Yeah.
But you know, we didn't really have a clear enough idea of which channel, or even which product that we made was our real hero, you know, revenue driver, and which marketing channels were working best for us and really like moving the needle. It might say, you know, it sounds basic. These are literally the basics. And you know, you need to stay focused, and you really need to know these things. And you know, I think that it's very, very easy to kind of get lost on that. And for us, it was a case of trying to add sort of building blocks of like revenue to our P&L. And you know, the really hard way to do that is to make, you know, is to grow one product and sort of stick with it for years and years and years, and you know, try to get through to product market fit. And you know, we looked at lots of ideas from doing that through to adding other SKUs. And you know, we went from having a really high-end product that we started selling at, you know, £4 a bottle for 200 mils of liquid, which is, wow, you know, really quite you know that you're onto something if people are buying it and buying it, yeah, again at that,
yeah,
price,
yeah.
Whereas,
yeah,
you know, we felt like pressure to sort of bring that price down and to be more, you know, a drink for like the every person, and to get it into more doors and you know, on shelf in more places. And you know, that led us to cans and all different formats and different sales channels, and it all got a bit like confusing. And I guess you know, I take full responsibility for all of that, and it's not, this is sort of like the wash up, you know, these are all a lot of issues, and I wish I'd been able to see them with like the clarity that I have now at the time.
Yeah.
But that's part of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think really like that, what I really wanted to talk about was the, you know, the difficulty that came with, you know, losing the money that we had raised, because, oh, you know, it's so, you hear so much about like, we've just raised this, you know, whatever it might be. I think it all comes from Silicon Valley, you know, it's like such and such has raised, yeah, a, you know, whopping Series A, or,
yeah,
somebody such and such has just gone public and is now a billionaire or whatever. there's definitely like a lot of prestige and status that comes with raising money, and it's very much a necessity to for most, not everyone. I do think that, you know, you can bootstrap and get a long way, and, you know, probably certainly on the first go, maybe people should do that. But yeah, like, you know, there's definitely a culture that has been embedded and is, you know, pretty rampant, that suggests that, you know, you should try to raise money, and that is almost like a key element or a key ingredient of success. And I don't, you know, I wouldn't change things. I feel like I've learned a lot. But, you know, when it, I guess, like I said, you know, obviously there's so much content out there about, you know, how do you raise money? How do you approach investors? All that kind of stuff. But there's not very much that talks about, you know, how do you deal with it when it doesn't work out? And how do you even make the decision that it shouldn't work out? And, you know, I think that for us, there was like there was probably a time, and it's very hard to pinpoint it to a very specific moment, but, you know, there came a time where you tried so many things and nothing's working, and you think, well, you know, we've only got X runway, we're going to have to either raise more money, or probably that's the only way to keep this going. And then you think, I know that in my particular case, it got to the point where I just thought, you know, we've already raised a load of money, and it should be, you know, it should be mentioned as well, that it's like really proud of having, you know, what the plans and the vision and everything that we've created, this brand that we're getting a lot of good feedback on, and really like sort of, you know, putting myself out there, sticking my neck out to try and, you know, convince people to part with, you know, pretty large sums of money. And it's you know, to then think like, well, we need to raise more money, but I don't know if we do that, I don't really know if we're ever going to be able to pay it back. And I don't know if it's ever going to sort of, you know, be this 10x investment opportunity that people wanted it to be. And that, you know, mixed with, I just don't know if I've got it in me to do this, with how much of a negative sort of, you know, part of my life this business is at this stage, when everything is so difficult and you know, it feels like nothing that you try is working. You know, it's sort of, I know there's like at least a few days where I'd get, you know, no from Mercado, no from Waitrose, no from Sainsbury's, no from Tesco, and it always felt like as though it was all on one day, you know. obviously not the case, and probably if you zoom out a bit, you know, it doesn't look like that. But I think that, you know, that experience of having to explain to people, you know, that nobody believes in the idea more than you do, but, you know, you don't believe in it anymore. Especially people who you've really tried to convince, and you put a big part of your, almost a big part of your soul, you know, laid it on the line and said, like, I am worth, you know, there's a lot of, you've got to get people to invest in you, to be investable, you know, it's all about trust and authenticity, and, you know, you've got to spark some level of excitement in them and sort of belief, you know, that makes them feel that this is better than having it sit in their bank account or whatever, and or any of the other alternative investments that there are available. And it's just, you know, having to then go back to those people, you know, and sort of float like, not sure this is going to be possible anymore. That's kind of the first stage. And then I guess after that, you have to have some really frank conversations, and almost, I think I would probably be the same on the other side, almost inevitably that comes back, you know, you've already gone through 9 out of 10 steps of trying everything you think is possible. And then for that person, the first time you tell them, you know, you're almost at the point of no return. And they think, well, surely there's got to be something that you haven't tried. And you're like, okay, well, what else do you think we could try? Almost every time it's probably too late by that stage. So yeah, I think there's I mean, I know in my case I took it really personally, I took it really hard. It was, you know, it put a lot of pressure on my personal relationships. It put couldn't sleep for weeks. I get like a little bit of eczema at that time. My skin was like bleeding, and because I was that stressed out, couldn't eat properly, and, you know, was drinking too much to feel something. And you know, I'm not like, I don't see myself as being a hopeless case or anything like that. You know, I was still turning up every day, trying to put one foot in front of the other. But there does come a point where you have to say, you know, this isn't going to work. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I wish, looking back on it, you know, probably I wish we'd made the decision sooner, because we could have dragged it on even longer, and I'm glad that we didn't. But we probably could have, you know, even avoided, you know, some of that pain, definitely not all of it, but, you know, certainly the feeling of like not moving forwards and not really moving backwards, but just being caught in a sort of no man's land is a really, really hard place. And, you know, you have to be decisive. And I think that's why it's really important to have people around you who are not invested. You know, they're not in it. There's no monetary relationship to the business or to you. And also who are not your best friends or people that love you. You know, you have to have some kind of person who you trust who can say, this doesn't sound like a good thing for you anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a far cry from all of the PR clippings and
the
moments where you think you're on top of the world. You know, there's some amazing moments in Sandals, and you know, I've met so many of the people that are my best friends, so it's like absolutely worthwhile. And you know, so much of what I know about just like the world, so it's not like, you know, I definitely wouldn't suggest to anyone not having a go, but you have to go into it with your eyes open. And I think that
other founders and business owners that we've spoken to as well, that the constant thing that comes up is that separation from work life and personal life. And I think that is where that it almost becomes impossible to draw a line, because the business becomes your life. It is what you do. It is an element of kind of when you're in it and you're dragging it forward, like you're saying, and you're starting to get investment on, and it's very difficult to segment the two, and having that key person there that you're talking about, I think is definitely incredibly important. And also something I took from that is very interesting is around the stigma of raising money, and exactly what you were saying about how brands almost get, when you get a paycheck in, or you get a term sheet over and you get the money in, it's a celebrated fact. Whereas actually what that brand has done is they've sold to somebody, they've sold them the dream. And really it's kind of just allowing a platform for the brand to exist versus what the press or what some of the industry press will say, which is exactly as you're saying, like they've raised a whopping 6-figure sum and it's all incredibly exciting. But actually that's the moment where you get to the point where like, whoa, okay, now we're in this, and as you're saying, becomes even tougher to sort of come out the other side. I think I'd love to hear sort of coping mechanisms with when you're in a sort of harder place, how you sort of got through, and obviously you had your support network around you, but were there any practical things that you kind of took away from that, looking back on it now, to get to the point where you are today?
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, leaning on friends, you know, became a super important, and I felt, you know, very lucky at that stage, you know, to have good friends. And although my folks live in Australia, you know, I spent a lot of time on Zoom or Skype or that kind of thing, talking to them as well. And, you know, I feel very fortunate to have the support network, you know, that I do have. But there's also, you know, I think I was very aware of it, you know, wanting to come out of the whole situation with retaining a sense of dignity and integrity from the moment that I knew it was probably not going to work out. And the, you know, I think in terms of, I definitely could have done better as well. And, you know, I think one thing that is really hard in, you know, my position, and probably why I haven't spoken about this much, you know, until now, is that there's definitely a feeling of guilt around, you know, I don't want someone who invested in me to hear me, you know, trading on, you know, that I've learned and it went to zero. I've had advice on that, lots of advice, and some of it is, you know, look, this is risk capital, you know, it's sort of, people have to read the terms and conditions and know what they're getting into. It should only be money that they're prepared to lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, there's tax incentives involved, but, you know, when, like I said, when you sort of like lay it all bare, and you know maybe now this isn't such an issue, but at the time it was, you know, looking people in the eye and kind of,
yeah, of course,
maybe over Zoom it's easier, but there's definitely a feeling of, like, you know, that you've especially when it's like a large sum of money, it's kind of a lot of it raises a lot of feelings, and you know, you really do want it to work out, not just for the business, but, you know, for that person as well.
Yeah, of course.
When it doesn't, it can be a bit, you know, it leaves scars. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, you really need to focus on making sure that you communicate well with people. And like I said, I definitely could have done this better. And I'm, on balance, I am proud of how I dealt with it. You know, made a point of, you know, setting up a process to make sure that everyone had the information that they needed as they needed it. And that really helped me to get through, you know, from from one stage to the next along that timeline. But then, yeah, you know, you've got to look after, you know, the people around you that, you know, are getting caught in the crossfire a bit, you know, your team. Because it's very easy to have big regrets about that kind of thing. And, you know, probably that kind of thing, you know, is definitely something I feel I could have done better. And it's just not, like, it's not healthy to have regrets about that sort of thing. So you've got to do the best you can, you know, really think about, you know, who do you want to be? Who do you want to see yourself as? And then try to act in the way that, you know, you're going to be able to live with that afterwards, because, you know, the sun will come up and, you know, you will be able to move on. And, you know, it's not even a year later and I already feel like I live a completely different life. And, you know, it's certainly a part of me, but it doesn't feel anywhere near as relevant or just as, you know, as painful, you know, as I did at the time. And I feel, you know, that there's even, I've had, you know, some of those investors reach out to me and sort of see how I'm doing, and, you know, that means a lot. So
amazing. It's an incredible story. I mean, I really, really appreciate you telling us about it. I mean, it's really the type of story we were really hoping to, you know, get out with this podcast, for sure. So is there, like, anything you wish you would have known at the time, like, if you could go back and give yourself advice? I mean, the communications obviously, like, a big point there, but anything else that springs to mind if somebody was going through something similar?
Yeah, definitely. I think if I think that the, you know, there's a few things that I think would have helped me in a big way had they been put in place a little bit earlier. One of those is, you know, that sort of processized communication. And there's investor updates where you sort of gloss over what's going on, and you don't want to either say anything too good because it'll make the next month look bad, or too bad because it'll make things look like they're on fire, it's really important to just be honest. Because, you know, these if you are in a place where you have investors, you just have to be honest. And it's no benefit to anybody if you're not. And yeah, I feel like I've learned the hard way a little bit on that front. I also think that, you know, probably being an investor yourself will help you to empathize massively with, you know, what you would ideally like to hear from a company. And that can be anything from, you know, whether it's like on Revolut or Free Trade or Robinhood or whatever, you know, you can it can be £100 and you can get the same feelings of, or even, you know, £10, whatever. I don't think it necessarily needs to be, you know, lots and lots of money. You just need to understand the dynamics of, you know, if I put this in, I'm looking to get something out of it on a time horizon. And then I think it changes the way that you look at, you know, that kind of relationship, and it will give you a bit more understanding of how to deal with those people. I definitely think, like I said, having sort of accountability partners, it's definitely something that I've like sort of fallen into afterwards. I really want to help people to think like second time founders on the first go, because I think there's so many mistakes that you just don't have to make and that can cost you so much, and that just, you know, we should just stamp out, and that should be easy enough to do. But being an investor, you know, I guess that's sort of like, I mean that in a just so that you understand the process is one thing, and having your own financials in order is really important. You know, you should treat your time as your investment of money, because whether you're bootstrapped and, you know, you get through to becoming profitable and, you know, you've built a great long-term business, or you raise money and you end up selling it, you know, what you as a founder bring to the table is your time and your energy and your, you know, ability to make things happen. And it's very hard to put a number on that. And that's where, you know, you've got your equity, you've got your salary. But, you know, I see so many young people in particular, it's probably more something that happens, you know, before people have commitments with kids or family and that sort of thing. But, you know, they don't really like protect their own stability enough. And, you know, it's the perfect time to kind of risk it all for a chocolate biscuit. You know, it's like you don't have all those things. So it is good to just, you know, really go for it and learn as fast as you can. But at the same time, you know, it's not worth, I've, you know, been like, we just didn't pay ourselves, you know, for the first 2 years, barely paid ourselves at all. You know, I was working other jobs at the same time, which felt great. You know, it was like, I have to like manage my time on this. But then as we went forward, we didn't really fix that either. And, you know, was working full time on it and some, you know, sort of, you know, 100 hours a week thing. And that should be, you know, you shouldn't be declined on trying to buy a, you know, a meal deal, a sandwich and a Mars bar sort of thing, if you're doing that. And it's a kind of self-respect sort of thing as well. So I think there's a lot of different bits and pieces there, and maybe they don't all necessarily all align to make like one mega lesson. But, you know, I think that making sure that you look after your health, you know, you kind of compartmentalize, you know, make sure that that's a priority. Look after your relationships with friends, you know, treat business like business, and it isn't who you are all in one thing. I was definitely, you know, that can make things really, really difficult, you know, it can make it so hard to make everything feel like, you know, the sunk costs are so much greater than they really are in perspective and in reality. And, you know, that it makes it very, very difficult to treat business decisions like business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the learnings coming from this are unbelievable. It's incredibly, incredibly brave of you to talk about it. And I think the different hats that have to be worn throughout the process of a business, it's only natural that there's going to be snippets of learning from each different part. I think it's thank you so much for sharing. I think it's incredibly brave, and I for one have thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. And you spoke briefly at the beginning about what you're up to now. What's next for on the horizon?
Well, I mean, I'm not really working on like a product or anything. I've actually been, you know, it's been really enjoyable to just like let my mind wander and, you know, just be interested in things as they kind of crop up. And I guess in terms of paying the bills, I've been doing a little bit of advisory stuff, you know, helping across governance and trying to, like I said, avoid some of these just things that just don't need to be issues, and making sure that communication is nailed on, and you know, internally, externally, and that there are processes in place. And then also a little bit of just e-commerce consulting, just to like keep my skills sharp and to keep learning. There's so much to learn, you know. I definitely, you know, if I was starting another business now, it would be, you know, direct to consumer until it was profitable, and then I would look to maybe move into other channels. There's just so much to learn about your customer.
Absolutely.
And it's just like, it's pretty inspiring, you know, to be able to build community in that way and really mean something to people, and then, you know, kind of develop it once you've nailed that down.
Yeah, absolutely. And the D2C piece is something that keeps coming up, and it's not going anywhere, is it? So it's a fascinating channel, and one that has obviously been sort of sped up by a good few years over the last year with the pandemic and everything. So no, interesting. And I think it's also incredibly important for us to say as well that when we're all in the industry, and obviously we know each other from the industry, and there's so many people that you get to know in the industry, you get in a bubble in terms of like everyone's doing the same thing, they're kind of creating businesses, or you start looking at other businesses, what they're doing, what have they done, what haven't they done. And actually it's so important to kind of step out of that bubble sometimes and go, okay, this is still a very small percentage of people who are putting themselves in this position and putting them exactly as you say, their neck on the line. And actually when you step back from it, you go, wow, okay, what everyone's achieving, what everyone has achieved is unbelievably impressive. But it's so easy to get that kind of tunnel vision of like, well, everyone else is doing it, therefore we need to be hitting X, or we need to be hitting Y. But when you do step away, it is sort of pretty mind-blowing, the thing.
Yeah, exactly. There's like, it can feel, when you put, you know, there's pretty low barriers to entry with food and drink.
Yeah,
and you know, that maybe is one of the contributing factors, in that there are like so many food and drink brands all the time, and the trend, you know, that happen at warp speed, and so it's it can feel a bit like, you know, there's just a lot going on, and inevitably there are, you just read about all of the successes and you know, you don't necessarily hear about any of the difficult parts, because it's just not how sort of certainly social media or any other kind of media really works. And I think that, you know, for most people, it's, you know, it's definitely something that they should be considering, is like, what, you know, I probably, I've thought a bit about, like, you know, if I had kids and they wanted to like have a business like I did in my early 20s, you know, what would I say? You know, would I encourage them, or would I say, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that? And, you know, I definitely would encourage them, but I think I'd probably say something along the lines of like, you know, you should try and do the best you can within sort of 2 years or something like that, and, you know, put a bit of pressure on it to try and, you know, make it as best as you can until that point, and then go, just maybe either go, no, it's not happening fast enough, which means it probably isn't going to happen. Yeah. Or, okay, well, you know, let's have a real serious conversation about continuing with this.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Good. Well, thank you so much. I mean, that was a really, really, really amazing conversation. I'm really pleased you came on and shared all of that with us.
No worries. Yeah, no, I mean, props to you guys for sort of getting the ball rolling on all of this. It's definitely, it's necessary for sure. There's hopefully going to be, hopefully it'll just open up the conversation a little bit more. And, you know, I'm very wary of like killing the vibe. I don't like to talk about this stuff and be like, oh, well, guys, you know, it could all go bad. It's not really like that. You know, I see myself as a really sort of positive person, but, you know, I think it's also important to acknowledge that, you know, even the most positive person in the world can go through pretty tough stuff. And just because, you know, they don't necessarily talk about it doesn't mean it's not happening. And
absolutely. Absolutely. And that's exactly what we are trying to achieve with the podcast, is everyone always wraps arms around and high fives and celebrates the big wins, and everyone's always together. And it's like, well, hold on a second. This works both sides of the spectrum. You need to be there together when things don't go right, and you need to be embracing for big old hugs when things don't go right. It's not always about jumping on the next successful brand. Thank you so much for coming on. It's incredibly inspirational. It's been fascinating, and you're incredibly brave of you to open up and talk to us about this. So I thank you so much, and we'll absolutely be catching up soon.
Nice one. Yeah, look forward to it, and all the best with the pod as it goes forward.
Cheers, man.